Australia has done what no good business would ever do, build its entire security around a single partner on that partner's terms. The cost is indefensible. We're talking billions of dollars over the next decade alone. For submarines that we won't receive for decades, built to designs and with technology we don't control, for a strategic purpose that is not entirely our own. And then there's the question of the United States.
Barbara Jackson, concerned citizen of Melbourne, covering most of the bases, addressing Peter Garrett's private public inquiry into AUKUS. The inquiry has already had hearings in Melbourne, Fremantle and Adelaide. The Sydney hearings begin next week. They'll be addressed by the former Foreign Minister Bob Carr and the former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull. Neither are expected to give AUKUS a pat on the back. We're joined by the inquiry's chair, Peter Garrett. Peter, welcome to Late Night Live.
Hi, David.
Now, what is the beast you're riding here? Public-private inquiry?
Well, public in the sense that everybody's welcome, it's transparently done, and it's funded by the public. Private in the sense that it is not a government inquiry, it's actually being conducted by private citizens.
So you can't compel the Prime Minister to attend?
No, that's right. We have none of those opportunities nor powers, but we certainly have, I think, something which is equally important, and that is the opportunity in our democratic polity for people to show up, ask questions and produce submissions for us.
You're the chair. Who's sitting with you?
So I have retired Admiral Chris Barry, former Chief of the Defence Forces, Carmen Lawrence, who many of your listeners will know, former Premier of Western Australia and also a federal member and minister. Karina Lester, the daughter of Aboriginal elder Yami Lester, a Pitjantjatjara elder who was affected by the Maralinga test and lost his sight and became a great advocate for his people at the time. And Leanne Minchell, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Australian Institute, a solicitor and someone with a background in environment and policy.
So what's the strategy? I mean, do you expect to discover things about the AUKUS project that have not been known before?
Well, we don't expect to, David. We have. But the strategy is pretty straightforward. In the absence of any serious parliamentary inquiry, any really decent and thorough investigation or analysis or presentation of materials around AUKUS, given its size, given its consequence, it seemed prudent for us to basically allow a process which would enable people to learn more about it. It is an inquiry. It's a genuine one. It has the terms of reference. And we're open to all comers.
And there's not been any public discussion from governments of the ins and outs of AUKUS? There's never been a public inquiry before?
Not really. The Senate committee looked at it briefly, but didn't do much with it. There was no cost-benefit analysis produced. We haven't had a commission of any kind. There hasn't been a full debate in the parliament. I mean, when the Joint Strike Fighters were being considered back in the day, well, you and I were still around, some of your listeners probably not, there was a Royal Commission and a commission of inquiry. There wasn't a ministerial statement that was then debated fully in the House and then referred to a committee. And we haven't been provided with...
For AUKUS, you mean?
That's right, for AUKUS. And we haven't been provided, other than an overarching, so to speak, rationale, with any significant amount of material, analysis, research or views on what AUKUS actually is constituted. In fact, we did hear in our hearings that most of the information that initially was made public about AUKUS could be fitted on a couple of foolscap pages.
Let's have the headline information. How much money?
$368 billion.
How many submarines?
Eight.
Delivered when?
In stages, but somewhere between the early 30s through to the mid-50s, 2050s, if at all.
If at all.
That's right.
If the deal doesn't come off, of course we get our money back.
No, we don't.
Fair enough. Now.
Well, look, you're asking the right questions, David, but it is an extraordinary obligation that the Australian government has entered into. And I think it merits us having the inquiry and a fuller public debate. And that is that under the terms of the AUKUS, let's call it a pact.
Yep.
We're essentially subsidising the United States and the United Kingdom to beef up their submarine building capacities in order that we might buy 3 secondhand submarines from the Americans initially, and then, as a yet-to-be-designed or built AUKUS submarine, a bigger nuclear-powered submarine, acquire those in part from the United Kingdom. They would do the reactors and potentially the first full submarine, and the remaining submarines, some 4 or 5, would then arguably be built in shipyards in Australia, particularly in South Australia.
But it all depends in the first instance in upping the rate of production of submarines in the United States, and that seems to be proving tricky.
Yes, and we've heard evidence already, and we'll hear more evidence, I'm sure, from experts who say it's simply not going to happen. And the reason's pretty straightforward. Apart from the vagaries of President Trump in his recent announcement of a sort of a super vessel that he wanted built, I think in his name.
Yes, the Trump class.
The Trump class. The American shipyards have struggled to get above 1.1 to 1.2 submarines a year, and they need to be much greater than that in terms of their production. By the way, under this deal, we've already paid them billions of dollars. We pay, I think, somewhere in the terms of $4.8 billion each to accelerate their shipbuilding capacity.
But it hasn't worked.
So far it hasn't, and there are serious questions about whether it will. I mean, we'll continue to hear evidence slash, it's not really evidence, but material brought to us on that matter. I think the thing, I've learned a lot about submarines since agreeing to head up this inquiry.
I bet you have.
And I don't want to...
If I could just point it out, you're not built like a submariner.
No, I'm not. What's interesting about it is that the more you think about what the deal actually represents, the less inclined you are to believe that it has any merit. We come open-minded in a way because we've got a terms of reference. And I mean, someone like Chris Barry's, you know, very, very experienced in these matters. He's headed up the Defence Force. And all commissioners don't see eye to eye on every matter. Neither have we essentially come to a conclusion about it per se. Yet, everything that we see up to now, in terms of a deeper reflection on what was agreed to initially by Morrison and then when Prime Minister Albanese came into office, essentially straight away by the Labor government, says to us that it's very difficult to see how this can be in Australia's national interest.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr. I'm talking to Peter Garrett, Chair of the Public-Private Inquiry into AUKUS. Peter, tantalisingly, a few minutes ago, you said you had discovered things that you hadn't known, that were not known before about AUKUS. What have you actually discovered?
Look, I think the main thing we've discovered is that there is a whole process underway that is essentially being embarked upon without the full and prior and comprehensive knowledge of the Australian people. And for example, we heard evidence both in Fremantle in West Australia, and the base there is the Stirling base, and also in South Australia, where the base is the Osborne base, that there's already legislation in place which is essentially overriding state-based legislation, planning controls, environmental controls and the like. Now, this is something which I think the people of South Australia and Western Australia had very little idea about. We heard, for example, that there's a significant push into education facilities, into high schools and colleges and so on and so forth, essentially supported or in concert with one of the big weapons manufacturers there, BAE, which is sort of entering into sort of the beginning of informal partnerships within schools to encourage
people. In what way, Peter?
Syllabus?
Well,
not straight into the syllabus. This is a question that we've asked ourselves and we've sought more information about that. But what seems to be happening is that on the ground, there's a fairly significant public relations campaign underway, which is designed to try and make AUKUS essentially more palatable and potentially more acceptable to the local population. At the same time, when we had our hearings in Fremantle, we heard from a former chief medical officer of Perth, a senior Perth bureaucrat, that there was in fact no nuclear safety plan in place around the base of Stirling in the suburb of Rockingham at all. So what we're discovering is a process which I would describe, I find it, I'm really struggling to find the words for it, David, because it's the biggest thing we've ever done as a nation post-war. Certainly the biggest defence expenditure in one single hit that we've ever had. It involves a partnership with two other countries for submarines not yet designed and potentially not delivered. And yet on the ground, there's a lot of activity underway which essentially is preparing the way for something which may not happen. So in that sense, you might say, well, we put the cart before the horse. But in another way, it raises the question of, well, what is the ultimate purpose of AUKUS? Is it really to allow Australians to have potentially 8 nuclear-powered submarines? Or is it really the fact that it fits into the American forward defence posture strategy, and particularly with Stirling, where nuclear-powered and potentially nuclear-armed submarines would start rotating as of 2027, i.e. next year?
Peter, who's talking to you? I mean, are you hearing from the supporters of AUKUS, or is this just a forum for complaint?
No, I don't think it's a forum for complaint, because a lot of the people, David, who've come in, particularly Barbara that we heard earlier on, are really sort of saying, I don't really know what's going on. When I have a look at it from the material that's available, I've got a lot of questions that don't seem to have been answered. But we have heard from some pro-AUKUS senior former ministers, Linda Reynolds, a former defence minister, and Christopher Pyne, also a former defence minister, both coalition ministers and both pro-AUKUS. Now,
let's listen to a grab from Linda Reynolds.
Sure.
And the stark fact is that China is in its largest military build-up of any nation since 1945. Today they have more than 60 submarines, and by 2035 they will have over 80, and almost half of them will have nuclear propulsion and have nuclear weapons.
Now we'll come back to China, but let's pursue this question of who is talking to you. Who are you hearing from? Technical experts who say, look, the problems can be solved. Are you hearing from financial experts who say, in the bigger run of things, this, you know, these hundreds of billions of dollars are not too much, etc.?
So the short answer is yes, we are, and we do expect to hear from more of those experts, particularly I think in the Canberra hearings, which will be our concluding hearings in a couple of months' time. The material that's come to us and the submissions that have been made and the presentations from pro-AUKUS parties have been confined mainly to the two former coalition defence ministers. But interestingly, David, Minister Reynolds was very much in favour of AUKUS, but also was very open about the fact that it essentially would make Stirling a nuclear target. That hadn't really been expressed, I don't think, in such an ambiguous language before. Christopher Pyne, who's now an arms lobbyist and was supportive of AUKUS, also made the remark, perhaps typical for Chris, that there's no way it's going to arrive on time or on cost. We have invited the government to present. I've written to the Prime Minister and the Defence Minister twice now, inviting them or officials to come and inform us about AUKUS, but we haven't had any positive response. A number of people who've been coming, there are people very concerned about radioactive waste and how the nuclear radioactive waste would be managed if it were to happen. But we've also had quite a lot of members of the public arriving just to find out what's going on.
Yep. Linda Reynolds talked about China. In the reading you've done, in the research you've done, in the testimony you've heard, has anybody advanced a rationale for AUKUS independent of the notion that we are a target for China?
Not really. I mean, there's some significant issues that we have to dive into when we consider all of the material that's come to us. And we will be hearing, I hope, from foreign policy experts and analysts who have strong views about this and will have thought about it a great deal. I think the thing that probably all commissioners would note now is that we don't see a rationale that's been put forward to support AUKUS as being consistent with what we can see in the region and what others are saying. I mean, the classic example is that China is a major trading partner of ours, and yet the rationale that's advanced for the AUKUS submarines is to protect our trading routes. Now,
yes, but Peter,
Japan was a major trading partner of ours in the 1930s.
Well,
didn't protect us.
No. There's an ancillary, but I think equally important question here, and that's the question around the number of submarines. Without getting into the detail of it too much, your listeners should be aware that there is a ratio that applies to having submarines full stop, and it's basically the 3-to-1 ratio. You have one at sea and you have two in dry dock or being repaired in some way. Now, to secure our sea lanes, both through the Indian Ocean and up through the Straits of Malacca into the South China Sea, with two submarines over vast distances is a stretch. Some people, including commentators and foreign policy and defence experts, have simply said the purpose of AUKUS is much more about enhancing and providing capacity for America's defence or offensive obligations in the region that it is around providing the safety of sea lanes for Australia. Now, that's something which we need to test and look at carefully, but that is what we've heard.
Are you hearing evidence that says the undetectability of submarines beneath the sea is guaranteed forever? I mean, when you look at the remarkable things that can now be done even before AI comes into the situation, these huge vessels moving, albeit absolutely silently and at great depths under the water, what makes us think that they are going to remain invisible forever?
Well, it's a really good question, and I don't think anyone actually can answer it, and that's the truth of it. Although you're right, David, to identify that we are operating in a completely different setting. And by the way, AUKUS has got two components to it. It's got Pillar 1, which is the submarines, and Pillar 2, which is cybernetics, drone warfare, asymmetric warfighting, and so on and so forth. Now, some of those things may, in fact, as per your question, be necessary things for a sovereign government in Australia to consider in the future. But on the question of the invisibility or otherwise of the subs, it's an open question, and it seems to be the consensus from what I can see from the material that's come to us so far is it's very likely that they're going to be more easily detectable, to the extent to which is not known. One important thing, though, about the AUKUS submarines is their size. They are massive. They are 10,000-ton submarines. The Virginia is 3,500 tons. I think the Collins sub, which is our Australian domestic submarine, is even smaller than that. And some experts have raised issues around whether they are actually suitable for essentially defending Australia because of the shallow waters to our north.
Right. Let us assume for a moment, because as an independent and carefully balanced chair, you'll be looking at this issue. Let us assume for the moment that everything succeeds, that we get the subs, we don't pay unnecessarily too much money for them, they defend Australia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What are we going to do with the waste they produce?
Well, that's one of the big issues that's come up, not only from people like the Medical Association for the Prevention of Nuclear War, but also from First Nations people whose lands have always been the subject of planned places to bury and store nuclear waste. The key thing about the AUKUS submarines, again, and I'm talking about the five yet to be designed and built submarines, is that intended that they would use high level of uranium enrichment in their core. Now, some submarines have what's called low levels of radioactive enrichment, but the AUKUS subs produce, so in other words, weapons grade nuclear material. And on the question of the disposal of waste, well, no country has yet, Finland's got something underway, but the Americans have not yet managed to deliver or develop a below ground safe permanent storage facility for their radioactive waste. It's just sitting around in places above ground in drums, and you know, some of the subs are just rotting. But in Australia, if we were to cost it, it comes in at around about, this is back of the envelope, $150 billion. So add that to the AUKUS cost.
$150 billion to deal with the waste.
Yeah, it would be around that. That comes from the South Australia did a Royal Commission into having a domestic nuclear radioactive waste facility, and that's roughly where we think the figure would end up. But there's a much bigger question here, David, and that is that under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and the Treaty of Rarotonga, of both of which Australia is signatory to, and the Treaty of Rarotonga is in our domestic legislation as well, I think on what we've seen in front of the Commission so far, there are serious questions about whether we would be actually breaching the terms of both of those treaties. The government says not, but I think there's very high risk there.
Now, your Canberra hearings are when?
Our Canberra hearings are in early September.
And that's it for the hearings.
That's
and
right.
Then the writing begins.
That's absolutely right.
And when do you expect to have a report from your investigations?
I'm hoping that we'll have a report by the end of November, if not earlier.
Wow, that's speedy.
Well, we have to be speedy because I think the issue is too important to us spending a lot of time delivering a report which comes in the new year. We've received some incredible information and material from people, and I expect more to come. After all, as you pointed out, we'll have former Prime Minister Turnbull appearing, we'll have former Foreign Minister Carr, and we'll have Admiral Peter Briggs, Australia's foremost submariner, appearing as well. That will give us some additional perspectives. But yeah, we need to get it out quickly and it needs to be readable. So it's going to be a plain Aussie language report, I promise.
All right. Now, you've been many things in your career, including a politician. And you therefore must have considered what political impact a report of this kind can have. Is this just going to be a gesture? Or do you see some possibility of the government changing course on AUKUS?
At the moment, Minister Miles and the Prime Minister and Minister Wong seem very locked in. But I really do believe that once people have a chance to actually absorb what we find, understand that everything that we've found is on the basis of verifiable information that's come to us, which is on the public record, or submissions that people have produced to us. And also take into account some uncertainty I'm now starting to detect in the defence establishment slash, you know, the think tanks and former retired military people who are really looking at, and even those people who are in favour of nuclear-powered submarines, question whether this is the right deal for us. So I'd like to think that there would be some reflection by government. But more importantly, I think there needs to be significant reflection by the public because this deal will, if it ever comes to fruition, happen long after you or I or any of the sitting prime ministers or foreign ministers are anywhere to be seen. It is a massive, massive amount of money. It's probably going to run into excess of $500 billion. And if it doesn't actually fulfill the purpose of keeping Australia safe, if it doesn't provide us essentially with a security strategy as opposed to a military strategy, then subsequent generations of Australians are going to be scratching their heads and say, how did this happen?
Well, exactly. I mean, why did we sign this deal? Now, this must be part of your inquiry. Do we know why we signed this deal, or do you think you know?
I don't think we fully know yet. There are a couple of differing accounts. The differing accounts come from different players, and I'm doing the little inverted commas sign to you here on radio. So we have former Prime Minister Morrison's version of events. We have former Prime Minister Turnbull's version of events. And we have a couple of sort of analysts and journos who've come with what they think the reason is. And Boris Johnson himself took some credit for it. They just thought they were dudding the French. You know, that's what he said a couple of months ago back or a bit earlier.
Well, it's always worthwhile, isn't it? I mean, go back centuries, dudding the French has always been a huge benefit to the British nations of the world. Yes, go on.
Well, I think the thing is that we don't really still fully know. And I mean, that's the extraordinary thing about it, Dave. And it's irrespective, I think, really, of where you sit along the political spectrum. How is it that a sovereign nation has got itself into a situation where it's basically underwriting the shipbuilding and submarine building capacities of other countries in order that we may or may not receive submarines in the future? There's a capability gap in the middle of all that with a very high price tag on them. We can't give them back. where we have to take care of the radioactive waste, no price tag on that, potentially with high levels of interoperability with American defence facilities and otherwise, and yet we haven't had a public debate about it.
Which you are providing.
That's what we're trying to do.
Peter, thanks so much for joining us on Late Night Live.
Thanks very much, David.
I've been talking to Peter Garrett, Lead Commissioner, AUKUS Public Inquiry. There will be hearings in Sydney next week and in Canberra in September. Peter, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks, David.